Welcome to Ill-Gotten Games, a show about pushing back on the toxic influence of capitalism in video games. I'm Six Detmar from Scanline Media.
And I'm Jennifer Uncle from Scanline Media.
And this week, on our second episode here, this is not a weekly show, so I don't know why I said this week, but here we are. We're here to talk about the latest abuse of, you know, normal people and workers in the capitalist nature of video games, which I think the most egregious one lately has been the fiasco surrounding Telltale Games.
Yeah, it's been talked about for several weeks and for good reason. It's what was done to them was pretty beyond the pale, even as regards to, like, we'll have stories that come out every once in a while of people of mass layoffs or studios shutting down, but it being on this scale and the way that it was carried out is kind of unheard of, to the point where they might have broken a few laws in the process.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we've had a lot of coverage about it, but it's all been sort of bits and pieces, and it's nice to sort of sit down and have, like, a dedicated segment where we put it all together, right?
Yeah, and obviously since we weren't with the company, our position won't exactly be as informed as it could be if you got it directly from a Telltale developer, but it's still worth talking over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, like, if you want to look into this more afterwards, I really recommend looking up some, like, the accounts of people who were Telltale employees who have gone through all this, because they have the most knowledge and they have some stories to tell about how it's all gone for them.
Yeah.
So, this story, like, the firings happened on September 21st, but I think the way things started was way before that, right?
Yeah, so, around the time of 2004, LucasArts put out a statement saying that they're no longer going to be pursuing adventure games, which was kind of their pretty acclaimed wheelhouse for a long time. As a result, several LucasArts employees left the company and formed their own studio called Telltale Games. And for the first maybe 6 or 7 years or so, it was mostly very small licenses or cult followings like Homestar Runner or Bone or Sam & Max Freelance Police. And they would basically put their own spin on it for various rights holders and platforms. Like, one of the first times that I ever saw this episodic model tested out was through GameTap, which was this ill-fated subscription service where you could play... Well, nowadays it's a lot more common to have a subscription service where you can play a set of games, but back then it was kind of unheard of, and they were doing a bunch of original programming, and Sam & Max happened to be one of them. Hmm. But yeah, they were mostly getting a small cult following of adventure gamers who didn't really have any big budget alternatives at the time, so seeing people be like, oh yeah, we're going to make another Sam & Max adventure, was a very positive thing.
Mm-hmm. And they had some buzz here and there. I don't think Bone hit that big, but, like, yeah, a lot of people went for Sam & Max. I thought the Homestar Runner games were pretty fun, but they definitely had a niche, right? They were not these big games. They were sort of, like, well-made, somewhat more approachable, but still clearly adventure games, still clearly in that point of click tradition.
Totally. And they had this reputation of just being really reliable with what they made, I think. Because They made a lot of these, even back then, and it was pretty much guaranteed that whatever they made would be interesting in one way or another, even if sometimes the gameplay part kind of failed, like with Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I think it was interesting because Jurassic Park is the one part where it felt like their reputation was kind of tarnished. Like, in the wake of Jurassic Park, people were like, I don't know about Telltale Games. I got really burned on Jurassic Park. And it was like their next project was The Walking Dead.
Yeah, they, in around the early 2010s, they had a twofer with both Jurassic Park and Back to the Future. And both of those were kind of not super well received. And then in 2012, they had The Walking Dead with several people who you might know them as Idle Thumbs or Important If True hosts that were responsible for a lot of the writing and stuff.
It's interesting to note, so they worked on some games before this. They worked on, like, Puzzle Agent and stuff, which is, I believe at this point, the only IP that Telltale actually owns is the Puzzle Agent series. But yeah, Sean Vanneman and Jake Rodkin ended up being the lead writers on Walking Dead Season 1, which hit with critical acclaim, and afterwards they left the company. And since leaving the company, they have... Like, they've had moments where they were been pretty quiet about the whole thing. I would say Sean's been a little more Jake's been a little more talking about it than Sean. But even when they've said something, it's basically been like, oh, this person left Telltale. I worked with them there. They were great. Never had anything nice to say about management. Basically was silent on management, I assume, because of, you know, NDAs and stuff. So.
Yeah, totally. After The Walking Dead, they had a string of... A bunch of, like, they had kind of an explosion of various games that they were working on. It went through The Wolf Among Us, which was an adaptation of Fables, or prequel to Fables. There was Minecraft, Borderlands, which might actually be my favorite Telltale game, even though its history, if you look up the history that Campo Santo wrote up, it might be one of the most contentious games they made, because... It was around the time when things started to visibly sort of fall apart, because that game went through an incredibly lengthy delay that really hurt them, and I think the result from that delay maybe pushed them more towards some of the unhealthy crunch practices they developed, that were really in the spotlight when that big tell-all article happened in 2017.
But if you think about Tales from the Borderlands and what makes it work, I mean, like, there's this sort of, like, dark sense of humor, and but also light sense of humor. It has sort of both going on. But one of the big themes in Tales from the Borderlands is the, played for comedy, this idea of a company that's so ruthless and awful that people are literally murdering each other for promotions. Which, gosh, it wonders if they were perhaps a little inspired.
Yeah, I've been playing through it again this weekend, kind of just because I wanted to remember the best of Telltale, and that game opens with you entering someone's office expecting to get a promotion, and the person you were supposed to get the promotion from is floating outside the window in space, dead, while your arch nemesis is sitting at the desk and being like, "No, I'm gonna promote you to janitor. Have fun."
Yeah. And so between like all the crunching and the management and them also taking on new projects constantly. I mean, they took on, let's see, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, they took on Game of Thrones. I mean, they were just piling on projects so fast that there were a lot of problems with the engine sort of not keeping up with. They weren't, you know, it's somewhat comparable to the Destiny 1 problem that people ended up talking about, where you are building with this engine so fast and so consistently that you never have time to stop and upgrade the engine.
Yeah, and that engine basically made it so that any sort of, I think what they called it internally was chores. They had they often talk about a chore team. They had to hand animate everything, so... The example I see given several times is if there's an apple that had to roll across the floor, someone had to do that frame by frame. And if you look at episode 1 of Tales from the Borderlands, there's this amazing slow motion sequence where this crane collides with something hanging up above, and it's this slow motion crumpling. And playing that earlier, all I could think about was, geez, I feel really sorry for whoever had to make this, because this is really impressive, but this must have been painful.
And while that definitely looks good, and there are times when they really nail it with that, there are also times where you can tell that they are cutting corners to try and avoid having to deal with that. Like, there's in the same episode, there's a moment where the main character, well, at the moment the main character gets frustrated and kicks a trash can. And he sort of kicks it, like, there, you see the trash can, and then it cuts up to his upper torso, and you can tell he's kicking, but you don't see him actually kick it, and it cuts back, and the trash can's on the ground. You don't see it, like, fly through the air or anything. Because, you know, if you're going to have to animate everything, you got to animate as little as possible.
Totally. And I think it's one of those cases where it's, from the consumer end of things, or the player end of things, it's easy to see something like that and go and write it off as like, oh, they were cutting corners and they were being quote-unquote lazy, which usually isn't the case. It's more what's most likely the situation with events like that is they were already working on under so much deadlines, and they know that they know that it might have looked a bit wonky, but that's what they had to do to move on.
Yeah, I know, like, I know I probably don't have to tell this to the people that we have as our audience, the people that, the kind of people that are going to come to us for Games Crit and commentary, but, like, almost nobody comes to video games to make it rich. Pretty much everyone's here because they love video games and they want to make good games. So, like, the lazy devs, greedy devs thing is pretty much always stupid.
Yeah, and it's because of that passion that they're often exploited too. Like, people will work through some of the worst conditions imaginable just to make this happen, make their dream come true.
Mm-hmm. And so with the information getting out about how bad things were in there, with that tell-all article and, you know, like, people starting to really talk about things, it seemed like things were really gonna make a move for the better, because Telltale sort of announced, like, okay, we're going to move away from our first party, the Telltale tool, as they called it, and we're going to start trying to transition to Unity, and we're going to work on making the production schedules more tolerable, and, you know, just improve circumstances there for the employees. And it was really encouraging news.
Yeah, and obviously laying off 25% of their staff at the time wasn't the best, and people kind of got a bad feeling when they brought in a former Zynga CEO to manage things, but for the most part, everyone seemed to have a really positive attitude about the way things were moving.
Mm-hmm. But not too much later was September 21st, when we got 90% of Telltale staff laid off with no severance and no warning.
Yeah, they came into work on a Friday and were told that that it was shutting down, and that their health benefits would run out at the end of the month, and that there would be no severance pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somewhere between 225 and 250 employees were let go by this. They said they kept a staff of 25 people just to sort of, like, it's unclear, I guess, probably just keep the lights on while they sort of roll out, you know, the second episode of The Walking Dead final season, and also to sort of handle just getting things ready for when there's no one behind the wheel. You know, because, you know, you can't just, like, turn off the power and close the doors immediately, even if a company's out of money. It just doesn't work like that.
Yeah, and clearly they were banking on outside forces to come and save them at the last minute, but that's no reason to hire people a week before this happens and relocate them and all that, because now that person's kind of marooned in an unfamiliar place with a job that they don't have anymore.
And it's, you know, like, in case you weren't aware, folks, like, it's not like, you know, this isn't, like, relocated to, like, I don't know, you know, I used to live in Champaign, Illinois, a nice little city in the middle of Illinois. There's a game development studio there called Volition. It's not like you relocated somewhere like there, somewhere affordable. They're relocating to San Francisco, which is, yeah, I believe at this point, it's one of the five most expensive cities to live in the world. It's easily the most expensive city to live in America.
Yeah, it's, and funny thing about being within San Francisco, California has a bit more strict labor laws than everywhere else, like, the WARN Act, the Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act, is a thing that it's a thing that's in several states, but in California specifically, it also comes with the attachment that you have to have a 60-day notice before you're laying off the entire company. And they had a 1-day notice, so sensibly, several former members of that studio are filing a class action lawsuit.
And, you know, there are various, like, criteria for what counts as a mass layoff under the Warren Act. And also there are, like, contingencies where it's like, if you are literally out of money completely, there, you know, not always, but sometimes it's like, okay, we can forgive you for that. But, like, it's sort of, it's, if it's, it feels like it was out of management's control. But one, it doesn't seem like it was out of management's control just because it, you know, there's no way that makes any sense. They were hiring people right up until the deadline. And then two, after firing all these people, they're now apparently looking for interested contractors so that they can finish out the Walking Dead final season, is what they're saying.
Yeah, and doing that a few mere days before they released the second episode that the people that were just fired had worked on, and a day or two after they said that there would be no severance pay, is feels downright insulting and evil.
It's also, it feels kind of diluted to me. Like, I don't know, I guess I don't know the state of how contracting work is in the industry, but if I were a contractor, if I were a studio that does contracting, and I was like, these people just ran out of money and fired all their employees with no warning without giving them any severance, I can probably trust them to hold up their end of the bargain. Like, no. What?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised to see Netflix also say, oh yeah, the Minecraft show we got from them is still going ahead.
I mean, once you've, with them, it's like, once you've invested so much money, it's like, you might as well, right?
Yeah, true.
And Minecraft's name is still strong. They're not worried about that. They're just probably going to stop. They're probably going to make the mentions of Telltale, like, really small in the credits instead of being, like, Telltale Presents, I would guess, or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's the lawsuit. As you say, the second episode of The Walking Dead final season got released, and everyone involved with making that has already been let go. And there doesn't seem to be any suggestion that they're going to use the funds from selling that to pay people severance. They've been dodging any responsibility on the whole severance issue and just staying quiet about any kind of answer to the fact that they just let all these people go. And it's like, you have to talk about incompetent management here, because that's been the story of Telltale for a while. So we've already known that was a factor. And then it's just like, this shouldn't be able to happen. Like, apparently they had some financing fall through, kind of at the last minute. And that's a reason for the studio to close, but it's not a reason for them not to have severance. If they were, like, you know, employees sometimes have no choice but to run paycheck to paycheck, right? Companies can't run that way. That's not, like, reasonable, responsible financing. And, like, I understand if you are running paycheck to paycheck in terms of, well, this is what we need to keep the studio running. But if you literally don't have anything in your pocket, if you don't have any money in reserve, you are being wildly fiscally irresponsible.
Yeah, it's what, and people were basically on Twitter during the weekend after all this happened, were sharing their own stories of being laid off in various other studios that went through similar closures and liquidations and what have you. And there were some of them that sounded like they were treated just as bad here, maybe even worse. And industry veterans popping up just to say, oh yeah, we've seen this happen before, is straight up horrifying.
It's a situation where, like, if you think about the way this is set up, like, management doesn't have to assume any risk here, really. Because they, like, you're putting all of the risk when you do this kind of stuff. You're gambling, and you're gambling with your employees. Because if things fall through, you fire all your employees, you don't have money to pay them severance, right? But it's not like the moment you do that, none of your games will ever sell a single copy again. Games still sell constantly. Like, you'll probably still see, like, money coming in from, like, fucking copies of, like, of X-Wing versus TIE Fighter are still selling out there on GOG, right? Like, money still comes in, however much. None of that's going to the employees, it's going to go to management, it's going to go to publishers. So, it's not that risky for the management to run things this to the wire, because they'll still get paid one way or another.
Yeah, oftentimes, like with Zynga, that you have executives that have golden parachutes where they have a very good payout after events like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's you know, as far as that, that's a bigger, like, the golden parachute problem is a lot bigger than video games, and it's going to be much harder to fix. But, like, I'm not saying the video game part is going to be easy to fix, but I think, I mean, you even look at a more recent closure, right? You look at Capcom Vancouver, and I'm not saying that one went great either, but also, like, it felt more, like, when the news came out about Capcom Vancouver closing down, you sort of like, yeah, okay. You know, you kind of saw it coming, right?
Yeah, they had several projects recently. Like, Dead Rising 4 really clearly flopped. Puzzle Fighter was only active for a few months before Capcom pulled the plug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and you know, there's, I think there's, even there, there's like, there, you can point fingers at Capcom, right? Because, like, they were making the projects they were told to make, and I feel like they didn't necessarily do a bad job, it's just that Capcom was telling them to do things that nobody cared about. This isn't, like, Dead Rising isn't some hot new property that people are still fucking jonesing for. It was a mistake to greenlight that project, to tell them to make that. But, yeah, as you say, like, there's some, like, the sales figures and the cancellations and stuff, I was like, okay, well, clearly this is heading in a direction. I don't know personally how well Capcom Vancouver was warned that this sort of thing was coming, but I certainly didn't hear any horror stories about them having, like, hired someone the day before. It feels like not only was this, like, this Telltale closure due to incompetence, it was due to malice, because they were, like, deliberately lying about their position. You know, they were, like, pretending they had this big plan when they were, like, you know, inches away from sinking under the water.
Yeah. Like, if you're... There's no way that they didn't know what position they were in when they hired someone a week ago. Like, there's... Management always has enough forewarning about events like this that they could take steps to mitigate pain for employees or any new employees they bring in, and they clearly weren't taken.
And, like, I don't, you know, I think it's irresponsible to not tell anyone else what's going on with the books, but there, even if that's going to what, even if that is what you're going to do, there's a way to do that that isn't as, like, that doesn't kind of give away the game, right? There's a way to be like, listen, we're working on some things, don't hire anybody right now. You can talk to HR. You can do this without being like, hey, HR, we're about to close, don't hire anybody. Because I can understand why management would not want to do that, because if they were banking on this, like, this, you know, investment that was going to bail them out, another round of financing, and everything was going to be fine, like, well, that's foolish of them, but I can understand being like, no, it's okay, we can save this. And you don't want to cause the staff a bunch of anxiety by telling them we're about to shut down when you're not. So they had options. They had options that were fair and reasonable, and they just didn't take them.
Yeah.
And I guess, I mean, like, listen, I don't know if you have anything else you wanna wrap up on this, but I feel like it's encouraging how much more of a spotlight this has gotten than other closures in the past. I hope we can continue to shout down all the dipshits who are out there saying, like, we'll fucking finish The Walking Dead. And it's like, no, fuck you. That's not what's at stake here. And I also hope we can really take steps towards unionizing in the games industry, because I mean, like, listen, Jen and I are not even, like, paid writers. We're not going to benefit at all from unionization, except for that people who make things we care about a lot will be treated better. This is not self-interest. The games industry needs to unionize.
Yeah. The only thing I really have to say left about Telltale is I was maybe not their biggest fan, but one of their biggest fans. Like, I played almost everything they put out. I got frustrated when some of their games were taken off stores, like the Wallace and Gromit one and things like that. And I would like to tell people to, like, if if things were in a better situation, I would love to tell people, go play Tales of the Borderlands, The Wolf Among Us, The Walking Dead Season 1, and all those if you don't already own them. But given the way everything has gone, if you don't own those games already, there's no way I could even consider telling you to buy a new copy of them, either digitally or... I mean, they just released that whole season bundle on disc for PS4 and Xbox One a few months ago. Don't buy that. Don't buy that new. Seeing people that made all these things I love get treated like this fills me with such rage that I cannot stand the thought of any of that money going to the people responsible for this closure and not the people who made the games themselves.
And even if you're not pissed, which you should be, but like, listen, I can't tell you how to feel. Even if you're not pissed about how this has gone, I think we can all agree that they don't deserve to be rewarded for this. It is a case of voting with your dollar where you have to be like, no, we can't, like, it doesn't matter if they're going to take the right lesson or the wrong lesson. At this point, it is purely, are you going to give the people who fired, you know, their entire studio because of their own incompetence, are you going to give those people the money to possibly start something up again? Are they going to Telltale revival? Because we gave them enough money on the sales they're doing right now on fucking copies of, you know, Strong Bad's Cool Game for Awesome People. I really hope they go down in flames.
Yeah, it was remarkable to hear that The Walking Dead was the only game that made them money after that point. Like, that had to be a case of some sort of weird mismanagement thing, because a lot of those games were talked about and played, and the idea that none of them actually made a profit after The Walking Dead is bananas to me.
Well, I mean, I feel like it was also a problem of supply and demand, right? Where it's just like, I mean, I would have played the Batman one. I'm not a big Batman fan, but it sounded like they were doing interesting things with, like, examining that character and kind of, deconstructing it a bit. Except for the fact that there was a new Telltale game every other month. And I was just like, I felt permanently burned out on their games because they were releasing so many, it was so saturated.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, just like top to bottom, incompetent management, incompetent leadership, and ultimately malicious decision making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess one more thing is, I for my part, want to keep an eye on where Telltale people go to. I think they had some incredible writers, they had some really dedicated staff, and yeah, if you're out there and you're looking, I know the games industry has done a pretty admirable job, at least as far as I've seen, of calling out and being like, hey, like, if you got fired from Telltale, like, where you've got openings, but like, if people can go through that storm, if you can work in that environment and continue to make games, you have a ridiculous passion for games and you deserve to be given a job where you can really shine with the tools and the resources and without the crushing pressure and abuse. Anybody would be, like, very, very lucky to get one of these developers.
Yeah. There's some amazing people that worked on those games, and they deserve the best.
All right. Well, I think that's it for us here. We're putting this one up on the old Scanline Talks feed. If you haven't, if you're just listening to this through the website or downloaded the podcast file, check out the Scanline Talks feed. We have a whole lot of random podcasts on there. They're covering all sorts of interests, and it's a fun little feed. And if you are somehow stumbling on this, though you don't know our work, we're from Scanline Media. That's scanlinemedia.com. We also have a Patreon at patreon.com/scanlinemedia. We have a whole bunch of shows. We do articles. It's a good time. Come on down and party. We don't do parties.
Yeah, we don't do parties. Not yet, anyway.
No. We're working on our DJ skills so that we can do parties. But until that time, peace out.
Later.